bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. It's the big show! Yes, we're here to discuss the week's technology news, and I've got a great panel. Oh, it's fabulous. No James Hart this week, but manfully taking his place, and certainly not the lesser man, Paul Wheatley from the iOS show, The Gamer Show.
Good evening.
And the web show, as was.
As was, yeah.
As will
be. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. You?
Yes, I can't complain. Hopefully my broadband will hold out tonight.
I know, it's gone dark outside.
Yeah, I can still see a little bit of sunlight.
20 minutes, it goes from bright sunlight to death.
To be fair, it only got bright like about 5 minutes before the Skype went live. So.
Good, man. Gamer Show was excellent this week. Well done, pal.
Thank you very much.
The three. Now, I do gather that Chiz is coming down for the bash.
He is, yes.
And what's going to happen at the bash with the Gamer Show exactly?
The intention is that we're going to run the quiz like we did at Christmas time. But basically, it's going to be the entire bash against Chiz to see if we can't kind of flatten the playing field a little bit.
As long as you stick to Sega Mega Drive games, I might have a chance.
But. No, we're actually thinking we're going to get some team captains and have kind of Chiz versus Xbox fanboys versus PlayStation versus PC, and then versus basically everybody else.
It's worth coming for that.
We get on.
That should be,
should be good.
A rare event. Is that going to be the entire afternoon?
No, hopefully not. No, I think we possibly do it early on in the day before Chiz has too much to drink because, I don't think he'll be able to calm the swearing due to the fact we've got kids there. So,
best of luck, mate. Next to him, Jeff Gamet. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing great, and I missed you while you were gone last week.
We had a week away. I was sick in a caravan, unfortunately, though, which wasn't the best of things. It was unpleasant. We took it in turns to puke. So,
which
I've done before, but it was a party. At least I was enjoying it.
Okay, well, so speaking of parties,
yes,
as I completely disregard the fact that you were in pain last week, I really am working on figuring out if I can make my schedule come together so I can come out for the bash.
Please do. We'd love to have you there, mate. It'd be fabulous.
And can you imagine fly across the ocean just for a party?
Do it.
And yes, I can imagine it.
Well, Teresa came last year from Boston. Yeah. She came over for the bash, and we had a great time. So you should come
That's
over.
That's awesome.
Come over. It'd be great. If you need a place to stay, mate, you can stay here. Don't worry about it. We'll get you a piece of
awesome.
Floor. We'll get you a piece of floor.
Awesome.
All right, mate. You're in. Beneath him, it's Sarah. How you doing, girl?
I'm very well. Jeff was saying about not having flown across the Atlantic for a party. I mean, you know, come on, you haven't lived. Yeah, I've done that, you know.
Why?
You've got to be done.
How's life in Essex?
I'd rather not think of it as that.
Looking forward to going back to Ireland,
London
is what you're saying.
Essex. I prefer the London bit.
Okay.
Yes, I'm going back to Ireland on Saturday, so looking forward to that. And the weather's a bit warmer over there, which is nice.
Excellent.
Not much, but a little bit.
Join us for the first time on the big show, but a very good friend of the network. He's the man that wrote the Green application, and he's also the author of Geek Badge. And if you haven't got your Geek Badge score, Paul Lums in the chat room is happy, and so was Paul Wheatley, because they had good Geek Badge scores at the bash last year. Yep. Andy Vaughan, how you doing, mate?
Hello there, nice to meet you.
Soon to be father.
Yes.
Excellent, mate. Congratulations. Well done. Fine effort on your part.
That was hard work.
It was a lot of hard work, yes. How's things been?
Very well, very well.
Anything exciting in the pipeline, apart from the baby?
Unfortunately, not much. Bit of R&D, but not really, nothing.
Okay. The excitement's coming, mate. Trust me, it's a whirlwind. And it'll last for the best part of 25 years. And finally, but by no means least, Mr. Carl Madden. In his screencasts online cap.
Look at that.
Oh, aye. What happened there? What did you do? Look at that, and then the video went.
Oh, not again. But hopefully no one's loading up a YouTube video again.
No, maybe not. So you've gone entirely, buddy.
I think that was Don McAllister, actually. I don't want that advertised on him.
You know, Don does have that level of control over the internet.
Don is God. Yes, absolutely. Have you been, mate? Sorry.
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Got over my cold at long last.
Finally.
So I'm quite happy.
And the doctors advise you to drink less beer.
Much less. I haven't had a beer all week. It's quite disturbing. So sobriety, not impressing me that much.
I find that amazing, Carl.
People's feeds are dropping out left, right and centre and stalling like you wouldn't believe.
Who have we lost now, then? It's
the TSA, that's...
Well, no, the thing is, I can guarantee, because I've got every device that can access the internet in this room with me, and no one can be on the net, I promise you, unless someone's hacked into me in network, I suppose. But there we go. The Week in Tech. What's been happening? It seems that Britons couldn't give a stuff about government onlineness.
See, I don't think it's necessarily don't give a stuff. I think it's that they're mainly crap.
Well, no. What? I mean, go on then. What's the problem, Paul? What is it about online government that switches you off?
I try my best to use all online government, but the problem is, in my opinion, having worked in government, both healthcare and in council, and also in education in three different contracts, they spend huge amounts of time getting guys in to build the stuff, developers, they spend time getting like infrastructure and everything like that ready, but they don't bother to get anybody who actually looks at customer experience of the journey. And so it hasn't been built in a way that actually makes it easy for people to use, whether you are quite knowledgeable about the internets and everything like that, or you don't know a stuff, it's not easy. I mean, trying to fill your stuff on HMRC is a pain in the arse. You have to have this password that comes in two different halves. Even doing things like tax discs online, it's okay, it's just not great. It could be so much easier, and they just need to spend some time getting some user experience folk in, I think.
I actually disagree.
Said the lady from local government.
No. When it comes, no, I've got to be careful what I say. But I actually, when it comes to local government side, I totally agree with what Paul is saying. But I'm also aware of things that the government, or actually the central government, are doing that I actually think are pretty good. And the gov.uk website is the first part of that DCLG are actually working on.
Yeah, but I mean, your tax disc online thing there is doable. It's probably the best of a bad bunch, but compare that to, for example, doing a car insurance quote in Money Supermarket, who actually have some reasonably decent UX folk in there, and it's night and day.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, the tax disc thing has been there for a few years, and it's due to be modernised, and as far as I understand, it will be.
But the tax disc thing, I just did, and it was very easy.
Yeah, I like the tax disc thing.
It could be.
Go on, Carl.
So I like the tax disc thing is one of the best inventions ever for dealing with the government. You just go on, you put your DRs in, it checks your license, checks your insurance, checks your MOT, bang, a few days later your tax disc turns up. It couldn't be simpler. Okay, yeah. It doesn't look that attractive, I'll give you that.
But it does what it says on the tin, I agree with you, but I do also agree with Paul, it could be better in terms of UX and stuff. So, but I believe that's being overhauled as part of the gov.uk project.
The tax disc is actually quite a simple process, whereas I'm sure there are others which are a complete nightmare.
Yeah.
I submit a VAT return every quarter through HMRC, and it is very easy. The only thing that's hard is learning how to make it very easy. And once you've got the routine of how to do it, but it isn't intuitive. I'll go with Paul on that one.
Yeah. Once you've got the Gateway account set up, it's very easy. But that, as Paul says, that process is quite painful, but I can understand why it is. Both as an individual and as a, from a business point of view, because obviously they want you to jump through certain hoops to make sure that you validate, they know that who you are, who you really say you are.
Yeah. No, I mean, the VAT one is quite interesting because you sign into your account before you can submit your VAT return. And then when you click submit, it says sign in again. And there's a bit of me is like, oh, Jesus Christ, I've just done that. But there's a certain point to me that thought, I was talking to Sharon, I said, yeah, this is a pain in the arse. And she said, well, what about if you were halfway through doing it and you walked away?
Exactly right.
And our four-year-old turned up and typed in 01010101 after the figure that you just put in. So there's $4,000 and it suddenly turned into £400,000. Yeah, the figures wouldn't reconcile, fair enough, perhaps. But she said, just suppose they did by some freak of opportunity. And then all of a sudden, that's what you've declared as your return, and we've got a $400,000 to find.
The other thing about that particular page, Ewan, and I'm well aware of that page, is if you actually look closely at that page, there's actually a declaration on that page as well.
Mm.
And I think that is part of it, is it, they're using it as a signature for the particular submission.
Jeff, how does the US, what's the barometer of US government web services across the population?
Well, my assumption is that all government websites are made of front page, use the blink tag, and have animated GIFs.
The people that you hear laughing are all the ones that understand web services.
Yeah. So, the web services for governments here, it is across the board. You can find some government agencies that have fantastic websites, and others where the description I just gave you is probably pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. And really, it is all over the board. Some of the federal government sites are pretty useful and usable. Much to my surprise, the Internal Revenue Service website is, at least the last time I was there, was actually a useful website. And that's not something that I would have expected. The IRS website, I think, by and large, is actually better set up than the NASA website.
Oh, right.
That doesn't surprise me, because I actually, I believe the HMRC site is actually one of the better central government sites. And that's purely because of the amount of information they have, and they've realized that there's a real incentive, especially now in the time when they're trying to do channel shift from phone and personal contact onto the web, that it really is in their interest to actually make the information usable, easy to find, and provide what people need.
Mm-hmm. But it's on stuff that you maybe only need like every 6 months or something like that, or every quarter minimum for your VAT return. I think they should be kind of looking at the services that people are accessing more often. And I know this is kind of getting away from government and healthcare, but dealing with your appointments at the doctors and things like that, and at the dentists, yes.
That's a stupid statement to make, Paul, because everyone knows you cannot get an appointment at the frigging doctor.
I tell you what, though, but Paul.
If you were able to manage it with in some way on the web, you'd be able to cancel your appointment if you weren't going to make it much easier, and therefore you'd be able to get appointments because the book would be freer.
Yeah. I mean, the one obviously thing that would have helped that is the that we've seen that the NHS just don't seem to be capable of running a big project.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that
it's not just that though, Sarah. I mean, to be fair, I'm not trying to say to be fair to the NHS because they're the ones that are the root of the problem. But the trouble that they have is that they start off with a premise. They go to a software house that then starts writing that premise, and then the premise changes. And the goalposts move because they've realised they've forgotten something. And exactly. There's really poor project management, and there's really poor outset management to begin with.
Yeah, I would agree with that. However, I was also going to say on the positive side, I can't speak for a lot of GP surgeries, but I recently had an experience with my GP surgery where I was actually able to book and later change an appointment purely using an IVR system on the phone. Mm-hmm. And that I was really impressed with, without speaking to a single person.
Yeah, isn't that the stuff that makes you pregnant, IVR?
No, you're thinking penis.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. My mistake. They're easily confused.
Yeah, the interesting thing is I would imagine IVRs are actually more expensive to set up and buy. I don't know. I've got nothing to do with telephone systems.
I agree. I would imagine they're stepping stone. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah.
It shows it can be done.
Uh-huh. Well, I thought that story was going to last 20 seconds.
I think another factor to this story is actually the article was saying about people aren't flocking to it, but it's actually to do with people's ages as well.
Mm-hmm.
I did check the stats earlier, a bit geeky, I know, but 46% of the country are 50 plus, and 30% is 60 plus. If you were to ask my mum and dad to do everything online, you'd think I'd ask them to set themselves on fire. Yeah. They just wouldn't dream of thinking about going to look online and stuff. They'd rather go and speak to someone or fill out a form, something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the London borough I live in and I work for, we actually have that specific problem because we have a high demographic of older people. And it's a real challenge for us to actually find ways of actually getting them to think about channel shift. I don't think there's any golden answer. And, we've taken a view where we're not willing to just, like some councils have done, and also central government to some extent, where they've just said, right, everybody, that's the only way you can do it. Because it's just not going to work. All you're going to do is hack people off. If you try and force them, it just doesn't work.
Rusty,
you have to accept the fact that you have to have a certain element. All you can do is persuade and educate people that You know, and this is the premise I take with people at work. Is, you know, you have to sell it to them in terms of the benefit from them. Like, you know, it means if you want to, you know, renew your garden waste collection annually for 3 o'clock in the morning, you can do it online. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait till 9 o'clock in the morning to pick up the phone or 9 o'clock in the morning to walk into a, you know, to a council office to actually do it. And it's by sort of explaining it from that level. I think you can sell it to somebody as in, what's in it for them, and then they're more likely to actually get it.
Rusty in the chat room says, "What's a tax disc?"
Good point for those outside the UK.
I don't think he's outside the UK.
No, he's not. He's in Aberdeen.
Well, he is. He's in Scotland. Yeah.
Soon will be. Sorry, Paul.
Soon enough. And I've got to say, go on. Sorry, Jeff.
Okay, to give you guys some perspective, listening to you talk about the whole online healthcare thing. Where I am, this is a conversation that can never happen, or at least certainly not right now. The whole notion that you can have a centralized place where you can go online to book medical appointments, that's unheard of here in the United States. There are some medical insurance systems, like if you're part of Kaiser Permanente, you can do some online things. But the whole notion of you can have a centralized location where you can take care of all of your medical needs, that's unheard of here. And just listening to you guys talk about, well, this is a problem for us and not being able to book this way or this other way, that doesn't happen here. If you want an appointment with a doctor, you have to get on a phone and call the doctor. That's how it works in the United States.
Well, it's the same though for most of the UK.
Yeah, the GPs, yes.
Mm-hmm. To go and see your general practitioner and get an appointment to get and get a reference to a consultant is painful here in the UK, mate. if I said, right, I'm feeling a bit under the weather, I'm a bit run down, I'd love to go to the doctors tomorrow morning. I've got to wait and wait and wait, and at 8:30, I've got to start dialing. I'll probably get an engaged tone on the phone for the next 25 minutes, and then at 8:55, I'll get through and they'll say there's no appointments left for the morning. Please ring again at 2:00 for afternoon appointments. And I've got to start the same process again.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I've got to be hitting redial. Don't look at the NHS, mate, like it's the jewel in the crown.
I'm not. I just find it fascinating that to look at the differences between the way we're handling healthcare and the way you guys are handling healthcare from a technological level.
I think it equally applies to the way it's been done politically as well as it is being done technologically, Jeff.
Oh, sure. I can see that. I mean, if you have a centralized healthcare system, there's no way politics can't be involved. And but to be fair, even though we don't have a centralized healthcare system, politics are very heavily involved in the way our healthcare system runs.
See, Jeff, I naively would have assumed that because healthcare was kind of run as separate little organizations, that you would actually be better in terms of technology and being able to book appointments and things like that online because hospitals and doctor surgeries and things like that are run as their own separate little companies.
You would think. However, from my experience, most of the doctors and medical centers that are around, they expect you to call on the phone. And in many cases, the computer systems that they're running are completely isolated, no internet access at all, and maybe running on computers that are 10 or 15 years old.
Mm.
Right. Oh, well.
Oh. Sounds like us next year.
We're done.
We're not doing any more. That was supposed to be one of the bullshit stories at the start, Sarah. Yeah.
We totally screwed that up. Sorry, man.
A hacker has turned a Kindle into a Raspberry Pi terminal. I put this in for James because I know James has got a Raspberry Pi.
Have I?
And you have as well, Sarah.
Yes,
me too.
He's using a Mac keyboard, though, look. Are you using a Mac keyboard, Sarah?
What do you think?
I was expecting you to say, am I bollocks there at that point? But but how cool is that? I mean, that is the antithesis of what hacking's all about, isn't it? Getting something that's not supposed to do something. And it's doing it in landscape as well, which I find really cool.
The great thing about it is yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got my Kindle here. Actually, I should put the Raspberry Pi next to it. It's like a little mini computer, isn't it?
It is.
You know, screen and keyboard, they're about the right proportion for each other. All you need is the keyboard about the same size, and you're sorted.
If only the Kindle had, like, green tint to the font, that would be better.
Do you want a green burn through on black?
Yes.
No, that would.
That'd be brilliant.
Andy, you'd get wood if it was that. You can't do it. No.
The technology in here is a bit too sort of up to date, really, isn't it?
It's got to be a terminal. It's got to be a CRT with green on black.
Yeah, which goes back about this far.
And if you're really cutting edge, it can be orange on black.
Ah,
so cool. That brings back some terminals. I used to love my Wise terminals. They had orange on black, green on black, and if you were really lucky, white on black.
My first ever corporate computer system that I used was a Data General system that was 2 gigabytes. It was enormous, and it filled the room.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was huge, and everyone had a little terminal. It was a CRT monitor, and it was green on black. And if you were a new employee, you got a new screen, and the new screens were orange on black.
Ooh,
that's what I had for my first computer, Franklin Ace 1000 with a 12-inch, 13-inch, amber on black monitor. And
those were the days.
People would come over to my house just to look at my computer. Many people didn't believe you could have a display that didn't have green text. They'd come over just to look at the display.
Charlie says he's got a Toshiba 286 laptop with orange on black, but it's not portable.
When does that? You just need to work on your upper body strength. It's portable.
Excellent. We like that. And the SEC says that it's okay for sensitive company information to be sent out on social media.
What?
Yeah. Because apparently someone did a tweet out and they got an absolute good kicking for it. And then the SEC have perused it. I think this is cutting edge, to be honest. This is one of the big stories, let alone one of the BS ones. But they've said it's okay, providing all investors are alerted to the fact of which social media the information may be transmitted on. So they haven't got to transmit the information first to shareholders and then to social media. They can put it straight on social media, but only if they've told the shareholders which social media they intend to use regularly.
This was Reed Hastings. He got all excited about how well Netflix was doing, and he posted it out, and that's why he got in trouble.
Yeah, more recently Elon Musk as well from Tesla. I think this is more likely a situation of not necessarily that they've been coming round to it, but more a case of, well, frankly, we can't stop them, so we might as well kind of not look as if we're not doing our jobs and just let them do it.
You know, to be fair with Elon Musk, they really can't stop him from doing anything. And really, if the government said, we don't want you to do this, he would probably turn around and say, I will shut you down and mean it. So they kind of have to say it's all right to do.
NASA can't afford to send Oreos up to the space station without Elon Musk. So you're all laughing, but that's no joke.
I know. That's why I'm laughing.
There you go. I don't think that's that bad. And of course, the first cell phone was 40 years ago this week. The first ever cell phone call was made 40 years ago on Wednesday. And I just thought, as a bit of fun, it might be good to recollect what your first cell phone was.
Do you know what was said, though, in the first conversation?
No, go on, what was it?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I'm going now. I'm going through a tunnel. Come on, then, what was your first cell phone? Mine, I'll start us off. Mine was a Panasonic EF6151EA. There you go. I only know the serial number because I looked it up this week. But that was it. It was a brick, and it had a plastic carrying handle on the top, and you got the grand total of 120 minutes talk time on it throughout the entire day. It was enormous, and that's all battery, what you can see there, if you're watching the video.
It's just awesome.
It was. And it had what was kind of cool was it did have an earphone piece and mic that fitted into it. So you didn't have to pick the handset up when you were driving along. That was my first one. What was your first cell phone?
I had the BT Cellnet pay-as-you-go. That was when pay-as-you-go first came out because, sadly, I was under 18 at the time, therefore I couldn't get a contract phone.
Is that the Philips one?
I think it was Ericsson. Hang on. Oh, no, it's Philips. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm showing a picture here on the video feed. Right. That's pretty late on. What year was that?
I would have been, I was driving, so it would have been 97, 98, something like that.
Yeah, see,
that would have been 17 only just.
You're just a wee baby.
Yeah. But my first contract phone, which I got in the morning of my 18th birthday, was an Ericsson GA something. I can't actually read it now. Yeah, 628, GA628.
Ericsson's my good, Sony Ericsson with good phones. And the Ericssons, when they were just Ericssons, were brilliant. Mm. I was saying to Paul in Twitter in the week, I had a T61, which was the little tiny, really compacty one. It was only sort of 3 inches by 2 inches, with a little stubby aerial that you couldn't pull out. It was one of the first ones that you didn't pull out, and it had a flip-down earpiece. And that had a really shrill tone, and I bought that because I was working in a facility that was really noisy at the time. But that was a cracking phone. That was about the fourth or fifth phone I ever had. Anyone else, what was your first phone?
Mine was a Philips Savvy BT CellNet. Page ago, 35 pence a minute. I think it was 5 pence to talk to my wife because we bought the same phone, which is probably I really did actually call because I wouldn't actually call anyone because it's 35 pence a minute.
You bought the same type of phone?
And same contract, BT CellNet. I think she
The way it came across, it was like we shared a phone and we used to call each other.
That's so sweet.
Backwards and forwards.
We were quite advanced, you know.
Yeah. No.
That's a crap phone.
It's pretty basic. Could you play Snake on it?
No.
No.
It had two lines of display. I don't remember text messaging. Blind.
Now, Sarah, your first phone, you could play Snake on. I know, because I had one of these.
Yeah, so did I.
I don't think...
8110.
No, that wasn't my first phone.
Oh, right.
I actually found out which one it was.
Sarah, what's the point of us agreeing that you're going to play along with this because you can't remember which your first one was when you then change your mind halfway through the show?
Yeah. All right. I did actually tweet you it last night, but that's another matter.
Which was yours then?
It was the NEC P100.
Oh, I didn't get that.
And it was a bit of a brick, but it wasn't complete brick. And I got that in November 1994.
94, blimey. That's a long time back. But you did have an 8110, didn't you?
That was my second one, yes.
And you could play Snake on it.
Yeah,
it was the only game on it.
It was one of the first ones that was actually curved, and it had a slide-out thing with the microphone, so you could actually...
In the Matrix.
Yeah. It was a bit like that, so cool.
Carl, what was yours?
Well, my first one, I put two links in my thing there. So the first one was a Mercury 1-to-1, like, brick-type phone. And it was good. The reason that was good at the time is because after 7 p.m, I think it was, all the calls were free.
Wow.
And I remember you held on to that for as long as possible. And in the end, I had to upgrade, and I lost my contract. So that was a bug. And actually, it wasn't a very good phone because it was like early 90s, mid-90s. And I don't remember it lasting all day long, but it was still pretty cool. It was my first one. And then there's the second link I've put in now, which was my Fisher-Price mobile one on the little wheels.
Very good.
That was still a lot of longer.
Do you remember, I used to do a load of work for 1-to-1, and when they were 1-to-1 before they were T-Mobile and they got bought out, and I was talking to one of the guys there, I said, I love the advert that you did, which was people dipping into someone's pocket while they were on the phone. And it was their friends walking up to them, putting their hands in their pocket and pulling out a pound coin and saying, hi, it's Sarah, I'm going to be late for tea, I'll see you soon, and take a pound away and walk away. And the last thing was a Chinese chef walked up to this guy, dipped his hand in his pocket, pulled out a pound and said, oh, sorry, wrong number, and disappeared. And then the thing was, 1-to-1, don't believe that you should pay for other people leaving a message. And it was the first time that it was the watershed moment of when... You stopped having to pay to pick up your messages. And I said, that was a great advert. And the guy said, no one got that. Absolutely no one got that. That's why we dropped it after about three runs.
Wow.
Jeff, what was yours?
All right. My first phone was an Ericsson, not Sony Ericsson, just an Ericsson. And I had to look at a lot of photos. I'm pretty sure it was the GF788. If not, my model looked exactly like that one.
Right.
So one line of text on the display, and a little flip down cover. So it wasn't a flip phone, but it had a flip cover over the keyboard. and the pullout antenna. And to this day, that's still one of the best cell phones I ever had. I think it had pretty much the best battery life of any phone I've ever had.
That's not a million miles from the T61 that I used to have. And it's still in this house somewhere. I need to find it. But it actually made calls. That was the difference.
Oh, yeah, it made calls. Mine was on VoiceStream, which was eventually bought by T-Mobile. And I was a customer for so long that as I was buying new phones that had the T-Mobile logo on them, when I'd turn on my phone, it would still come up and say VStream. And people were very confused trying to figure out how I had hacked my phone to make that happen. And it was an awesome little phone, and I hated giving it up, but when it was time to get a new contract, and it came with a new phone, and so I did. So that the consolation is, I gave my old phone to a battered women's shelter because they were collecting phones for women that were victims of domestic assault. So,
well, you thought you'd rub salt in the wound by giving them that piece of crap.
Well, you know,
it was an incentive to make him go back to the husbands.
or to call someone better.
Charlie's off on one with what was its phone. Charlie had a Bosch 509E, which I've just clicked on the link he's put in the chat room. That's the coolest of the shitty phones that we've had so far. It was on orange, and it was an orange phone. It actually was orange, translucent plastic. You could see the inner workings of it. And well done, Charlie. Batwinch says she had a 1610, Nokia 1610. Sack says his first phone was Nokia 5110. And Batwinch has put another one in saying a 6110. So she typed 1610 wrong. There we go. Should have checked first, shouldn't I? Well done. Excellent. We still haven't finished the BS stories at the start, but never mind, eh? Baidu is supposedly going to release a competitor for Google Glass. I saw this and I thought that was quite interesting because, I mean, the one thing that Google Glass definitely needs is a competitor. There's no question of that. But tech journalist, I've got to get the quote right here, otherwise I'm going to get my arse sued terribly. Tech journalist Milo Yiannopoulos has asked the question lurking in everyone's mind about Google Glass. It's an audacious project for a company that no one trusts to behave responsibly with your data. A pair of glasses that can monitor and record the world around you, he writes. But if glass becomes as ubiquitous as the iPhone, are we truly to believe that Google will not attempt to abuse that remarkable power? Now, I've never heard of Baidu before. I got the impression they probably did some crap gaming machine in the 70s. But do you really? There's a good point there, is that the people that are developing these devices, they're holding enormous amounts of data of you, and whether you do trust them.
If we let them
to have
that control, then that's fine. Then so be it. It's no different from what Facebook do.
But you don't get an opt-in or opt-out with the glasses, do you? Because they're giving you real-time data, and they need to know your location, otherwise you're absolutely knackered, because most of the data is irrelevant at that point.
Yeah, but it's what happens with that information, isn't it? That's the key. And I'm sure there'll be some control over, you know, how long that data's held for, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. And hopefully, through our Google accounts, we'll have ability to control that.
Mm.
If we haven't, then yes, I'd be very concerned.
But
you've always got...
Go, Carl.
What people seem to be freaking out about Google Glass, though, is they're saying, oh, people come up and film me when I'm not aware that they're filming me, not knowing that every time they walk down the street, they're being filmed by about 50 security cameras.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Yeah, but there's always an option to not having your data taken by Google is you just don't use Google.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody else has got to be... Baidu's coming along and giving this. Well... Roddy, who's on the iOS show with me, he is completely out of the Google sphere. He doesn't use Google for anything, email, docs, so much so that it's actually a pain in the arse doing the show notes for the iOS show because we have to use some bizarre note package that he's got on a server that he owns somewhere because he just won't use Google at all. So it's possible, albeit it's a little bit of a pain in the arse sometimes.
Mm. Andy?
It's a bit like me with Apple, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's irrational.
No. Now, how much of our data is being collected by our cell phones already? And how much, realistically, how much more would we be giving up with Google Glasses or Baidu Eye? My guess is that ultimately the amount of data that we are giving up to the eyewear type devices isn't that much more than what we're already giving up just by having cell phones.
Does anyone here use Google Latitude?
Yes.
No, I used it years ago, but it was a bit rubbish, so I never went back to it.
There's no difference between that and what we would be doing with the glasses.
I think if you actually went and looked at the amount, if you went and looked at the amount of data that Latitude is storing on what you do and where you do it, you'd be horrified.
Yeah. No, I've gone and checked it. I'm quite impressed with Latitude. I mean, it does. I can see exactly where I've been on the entire planet for the amount of time I've had it turned on.
That's why I see a use for it.
Yeah, and for me, like, because of the job I currently do, where I'm doing lots of routes every day, I can actually go in and I can see if I've took the most effective route that day. I know that's a bit geeky and pointless, but it's quite interesting to, you know, say, oh, I could have cut across there and found a shortcut. And
GPS is for, Carl.
Yeah, I know, yeah, but GPS doesn't always send you the quickest right here.
Yeah, I know.
Strangely enough.
But maybe it's naive of me, but I kind of want these companies to know more about me. I trust them for the moment, maybe just because I've not been bitten yet, but I trust them, and the more they know about them, the more they can help me and make my life easier, which is what we want technology for.
That's exactly my view.
Well, that's the whole idea behind Google Now.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
Which I think is very compelling, even though I am a little creeped out about how much information they would have on me.
I think Google is creeped out because it's a video, it's pictures, it's moving pictures.
Mm.
There's so much information already, you know, we've talked about, but because it's a picture, people freak out about it. People freak out if you're just a photographer taking pictures of people.
Yeah, I mean, I stood in Trafalgar Square working for a company before Christmas, and I got Matthew Wright giving me a V sign, calling me a wanker, and a bloke who drove a Hell's Angel mobility scooter coming up to me and say, I want you to delete the photos you've just taken of me. Well, why would you dress like a Hell's Angel on a frigging mobility scooter and drive around Trafalgar Square if you didn't want your picture taken, you arsehole?
That is kind of like...
That's a really good point.
Which is not... That's not what I replied. I replied, yeah, no problem. That was what I said on the inside. You know?
I think a lot of it does come down to trust, though. I mean, and I'm totally with Paul on this. I actually trust Google. I slightly worry about, you know, where they're going with DoubleClick and stuff like that. But generally, I do actually trust them. I don't have that same feeling with Apple and Facebook.
Hmm.
Who I don't trust.
The chat room's asking who Baidu is.
No, you say that, who are they? And I know, I've now looked in I found out that they're a Chinese search engine, but I got the question from NX3 saying, you don't know who Baidu is?
No. Yeah, well, it's because Google pulled out of China, so basically who are you going to use if you're not going to use Google? So Baidu is basically Google of China because Google's not there.
No, absolutely. BlackBerry 10... has got a wonderful little glitch in it. If you're using a BlackBerry 10 machine, then think carefully about what you're watching, because if you've engaged BBM to repeat what you've been watching and listening to your local BlackBerry contacts, then it does it religiously. And even if you're sitting watching porn in your hotel room, it will repeat that to everyone that you know on your phone.
Ooh. Now, depending on who your friends are, that might be a public service.
Could be. I haven't got a picture for that, unfortunately, but never mind. And
I bet we could find one on Google pretty quick.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's one. The big story is the Facebook thing. Facebook has said that it's going to... there's a rumour kicking around that the HTC phone is actually going to be the new Google phone. I've got a picture of it here, and I've got to say, it looks...
Well, they've done their announcement. It's not a rumour anymore.
It looks very passable, doesn't it?
April 12th, that's the day it's available. $99 with a 2-year contract.
Yeah, and also there's a review of the way in which news is presented to you through their news feed as well as. Or have I got the wrong date on that?
So it's basically a skin on Android for the moment that allows you to basically access all of your Facebook junk, which kind of makes sense due to the fact you've got events for your calendar, you've got all your contacts in there anyway. I think it might sell some phones to perhaps the younger demographic.
Hmm.
I don't know. The pricing, I think, is weird. No longer uses Facebook.
Really?
Yeah, there's more and more reports coming out that saying the young, for you know, want of a better word, the young whippersnappers are moving away from Facebook and they're using more one-on-one messaging type applications.
Hmm. See, I having got a 14-year-old, which I think is possibly falls in that younger demographic, she uses Facebook fairly heavily. But then again, I do agree with you, Carl, in that what she uses Facebook for is Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, I mean, my experience of Facebook is not particularly brilliant. We've got a fan page, and I go on it periodically just to check email, but it's once a week, if that. But there's a huge use of Facebook for messaging only through what I see at the rugby club. So if this is a messaging facility that then appears on home screens on Android phones, ta-da.
Well, that's definitely part of it.
It's definitely...
The idea is, instead of hopping into a bunch of different apps to do the social things that you do, it's all presented as part of your home screen. So your friends are taking photos and they pop up on your home screen, which could be awkward. And and then you can tap the stuff you like and don't like. And all of the social interaction things you do, instead of having to hop into individual apps, it's all done from just images and other bits of data that are in front of you all the time. So the concept, I think, is actually kind of good, because if you're doing a lot of social networking things, being able to just simply make them happen without having to think about what app you're in is kind of compelling. Now, how this actually plays out in real world use, well, we have to wait till April 12th to see what it really does.
I have a question. The way you get this is you download it from the Google Play Store, and then you choose if you want to have it as your new skin, I think they said.
Yeah.
So does that mean if you've got, say,
that was my question,
an S3 and it's got Vodafone's skin or whoever's skin on it, that will just get blown away?
Yes. That was my question entirely.
That's how it sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's going to come on the HTC one. If you buy it at the shop, it's actually going to come with a Facebook skin on it on an HTC phone. See, I could think this is as a benefit from a sales point of view, because there's a theory that if you go into a store, people know the name iPhone. It's kind of more regular muggles, if you like, know the name iPhone, and they tend to not know the Android name. And I apologize, Sarah, please don't jump under my throat for saying that. But the idea of having a Facebook brand on an Android phone will actually sell phones, I think. Because people know the name.
I would probably say that 80% of people that own an Android phone don't know it running Android.
Mm-hmm. I bet they'll know that they're about Facebook. Sure. They'll have heard of Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I first read this story, I was fuming. And then the comment that Carl made about it being a skin which you can download and then you actively activate. Fine, that's fair enough. People want to do it. But I'm sorry, but no one's telling me what I'm having on my homepage other than me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not doing that. No, it is an optional thing.
No, I know. I realise that now. And that's why I'm telling a bit about it.
But the point that came across from what we were saying there with Carl, and this was the thought that immediately sprang into my head, it is reskinning your homepage. And a lot of providers have gone to a lot of time and effort and expense to make sure that you're seeing what they want you to see. Mm-hmm. And the question then may be, well, would those providers end up blocking Facebook from being installed anyway? Mm. It's a very realistic possibility.
Is that something you can do, though?
Particularly in the US, I can imagine.
You can lock your homepage down.
Prevalent.
Sure. Now, another thing I see coming out of this is Facebook's operating system, which will be a fork of Android. That's not what they're doing right now, but I really think this is the first step Facebook's move to create their own system. And they'll fork Android to do it, because they can do it for free, and then make a completely, I don't want to use the term locked down, but how about locked to Facebook?
Like Amazon have done.
Yeah, like Amazon.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, like with the Kindle.
Yeah. But is that a bad thing for the market that this is going for? I totally get that everybody that's listening to this and everybody that's on the panel and everything like that's not a good thing that we want or we would like to happen. But for the market that they're going for, why would that be a bad thing for it just have everything locked down and it's just a simple, cheap Facebook phone that allows you on Facebook, allows you to browse with the like button up the top right-hand corner so you can like absolutely everything that you want? I mean, it's all negatives to us, but it's actually lots of positives perhaps for the market that they're going for.
I think the negative, though, Paul, is the fact that actually the reason that that's the case is because they won't invest the money, or they can't invest the money, to develop a specific handset for the purpose. So all they've come up with is a piece of cloning software that will just rip over the top of everything else that you've got to give them their front end. That'll make it look like it's a Facebook phone. The Facebook phone has been kicking around for 2 years now and never come to fruition. Sorry,
Jeff. He addressed that in the keynote, though. He said if you produced a phone, the maximum you're going to get is like 20 million people. They're saying they got over 1 billion people using Facebook.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're putting their tools.
Sorry, so the idea was to make an app that anyone could put on, eventually anyone can put on their phone. They're going to struggle with iPhone, I think, because there's no way Apple's going to let them do what they want to do on, on Apple device.
Nice try.
Well, they made it pretty clear through through their special phrasing of words, it's not coming to the iPhone.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they said we have a good relationship with Apple, that's a nice way of saying, this isn't coming to iPhone.
Tim was mean to us.
I don't. It's not coming to that many Androids either. I think at the moment it's going to be on launch day. It's going to ice cream and jelly bean devices. But also, I'm not sure they're going to be able to publicize it enough, because you have to do something active to get this thing. And I'm not. There was another report. I'm sorry. I keep putting these reports out of the air. But there's a report saying most people
stop the rest of us.
don't get apps on Android devices. They just literally use it as the phone as it came in the box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the uptake will be.
Well, they have
probably what they'll do is they'll say, okay, fine, we realise that. So what we're going to do is, given that most people want to access Facebook on their phone, and they might start by doing it through a Facebook app or through a browser on the phone, we'll just promote it like hell on the website. Hey, if you actually do this through here, you just click here and we'll download it for you through the Google Play Store, and away you go.
But that's the point.
It's going to show up as an inline ad, just like other ads, I would suspect. And they'll be able to present it to their target audience, which is Facebook users, while they're looking at Facebook.
But I think there's an awful lot of
people. They'll be able to get the word out quickly and easily.
No,
I'm being really cynical about this, but I just think this is just Facebook actually getting even more desperate about serving up ads to try and make revenue. And that's all it's going to be, is if it's in my face, it's going to be serving up ads.
Because Facebook is about selling us to advertisers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they get more and more desperate to actually satisfy that they're investors in terms of actually producing
ads. Well, I think that's where the desperation comes. Carl, what was your point?
This is desperation, definitely.
When the demo they showed, there was no adverts coming up at all. I mean, I don't know if they do sneak up, but he's saying your friends, your most important friends, they will come up. There was no mention of adverts. I guess if people do install it and they do get a ton of adverts, that's going to be deleted very fast.
Yeah, Carl, it will be now, because they've got to get it on the phones. Once they've got it on the devices and they start actually getting a bit more traction with it, then they'll start using it to serve up what they're really going to do, which is just adverts.
And they made it very clear during the presentation that ads are coming to Google Home.
Wow.
It's just a way of saying to advertisers, yeah, we can serve up on another platform and we can force people to look at these ads. And I'm not saying, because I know it happens with Google as well. I'm not saying that, Facebook, but it's like, it's because it's the fact it's going to be on the homepage. And I agree, once people realize what it is and they do start getting served up a lot more ads, it's going to get canned because people are going to get fed up with it. They want to see their information. They're not just seeing ads.
But on the other hand, they'll be able to serve more relevant ads. I broadly agree with your point, but if it's on the home screen and they're able to actually track everything that you're doing through your web browser, who you're speaking to, what you're speaking to people about, much as that potentially could be quite scary to people, it will actually start serving them up more relevant ads to things that they actually want. And I have to say, if I'm going to have a free service that is completely based on advertising, I would prefer the ads to be relevant to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul.
People just get used to the ads. I mean, people are used to the adverts on ITV. They're there all the time. But
yeah, go make a cup of tea.
You know, they're there, and it's going to be free. It's going to give you access because all your friends and family are there. I think I think in some ways, I really like the idea. Yeah. I think it's quite a clever way of collating all the information together as a user experience. I actually quite like it. I think it's quite nice. But I think, once it starts going, I think people will really like it. And as we said before, Facebook will draw people to get the phones.
Mm-hmm.
Windows has released details of a new version. There's a few rumours kicking around that go along with it. This is 8.1, and it's been codenamed Blue. Windows Blue 8.1. There's supposed to be quite a significant amount of updates. It's a point update rather than being a whole new OS, but there's a lot of people suggesting that they've fallen in line with Apple's OS release policy. But Blue's going to come this summer, supposedly. And Shaw Frew was Microsoft's corporate vice president of communications, said that this heralds a continuous development cycle, the new normal across Microsoft, because before we've never continuously improved. We've just pumped out the same old shit and hope people would buy it.
Never spoken the truth.
I may have misquoted him on that. I need to read again.
I'm pretty sure that's verbatim.
I don't think that would have got through the PR gurus.
I was talking to a customer this week and I said, I was talking about something else and I said, you can't just Rolls-Royce it. And he said, what do you mean Rolls-Royce it? I said, Rolls-Royce, they pumped out and created piles and piles of shit through the 70s, 80s, knowing that people would buy it. And then in the 90s, people stopped buying it because they realised it was utter and total crap. There you go. Is Windows 8.1 blue? The blue version of Windows. Perfect for your porn. Won't transmit it to anyone else in your BlackBerry group either. Is this the new Nirvana for Windows? The other thing to say as well is that there's a redesign of Outlook, and I hate iCal. iCal's the biggest piece of crap I've ever seen. And I looked at Outlook and thought, Outlook.com actually looks pretty appealing at the moment as a replacement for iCal for an online service. If I could actually get it to recognise it as a calendar in iCal, that'd be even better.
I quite like the design, for all the negatives I could say about Windows. I quite like the design of Windows 8 and subsequently Windows Blue and Outlook.com. I quite like that flat look.
Yeah. Anyone else looking at Outlook.com and seeing positives?
Nice and clean.
It is.
It's clean, but it's not making me excited. What I'm doing is using alternate apps that use my iCal calendar data and then I just don't deal with calendar.
Yeah. I think the only thing to say though on that point, Jeff, is that you want an app, you want a game to make you excited. You don't want a calendar app to make you excited. You want a calendar app to be plain, to be simple, to be viewable, to be instant, for the big information to hit you.
Actually, I do want my calendar app to excite me, but not in the way that a game does. I want it to excite me in the sense that it makes it easy for me to get at all of my information, to enter that information, and use it in an effective way. Mm. And if the tool lets me do that, then I get excited about it. If it doesn't, then I get pissed off and annoyed and look for something else.
Yeah.
I just let Google Calendar know exactly where I'm going to be on exactly what day so they can drone me.
And Carl's feed has dropped again for some reason. I've got no idea why Carl keeps dropping out, and Sarah does as well at the minute.
Oh.
The main feed appears to have gone as well.
Let's restart it. That'll keep people happy. They get another
app. Now, my assumption is that Google Windows Blue is actually a derivative of Google Blue.
Did you hear about the Gmail one?
Yeah, the Gmail Blue.
It was funny, wasn't it?
That was fantastic. Yeah. We were inspired by things that are blue. The sky, water, blue whales. Yeah.
I can't restart the feed, unfortunately, so I'll try again in a second. I don't know why that's happened. Never mind. The Bash is coming up. It's the 6th of July 2013. It's a Saturday this time. It was the 6th of July last year, which was a Friday. Same kind of format. I'm going to take £20 off. I've had a couple of emails this week. One of them said, who the hell do you think you are? Bloody Glastonbury, charging £20 for entry. It's not a ticket to just get through the door. You will not be expected to bring your own alcohol, and you will not be expected to pay for alcohol once you're there. The £20 is to let me know that you're coming, and also to make sure that we've got enough money to buy everyone's food and everyone's beer for the day. So there should be nothing for you to pay apart from your taxi back to your hotel and the hotel to stay up here. That is it. The £20 is not an entry fee. It is to pay for the day. Now, a few people lots of people bought the tickets. We're not far off short having sold as many people as actually turned up for the whole of last year, which is great. But the problem I've got is I need to book a caterer and I need to book a bar and that kind of stuff. I need to tell the numbers of people that are coming. If you're sitting holding on to your £20 thinking, well, I'll buy it a couple of weeks before and that'll be the end of it, otherwise that bastard Rankin's got me £20. I'm not taking your £20 and drinking it. What I'm doing with your £20 is making sure that I've booked a food service. I cannot book food for 300 people the week before the bash occurs. So please, 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 if you're going to come, get your ticket purchased. It'll just sit in the PayPal account. I won't be doing anything with it, and it'll be used to pay for all the services. Effectively, what we're doing is splitting the bill between us all. That's it. No one is getting a freebie. If anyone says, do I need to pay because I do so much already? Yes, you do. And the reason you need to pay is because you're buying your food and your beer. This is not
what it sounds. That includes us guys as well.
That includes everybody. Yep. Just because you come and take up seats, and I'm really grateful, don't get me wrong, but it's going towards paying for your food and beer. So it's not like it's an entry fee that I can just waive. So if you want your ticket, get your ticket now. The money will sit there. I'll know how many people are coming. And 6 weeks before the bash, I can place an order for a caterer with no fear of worrying that I'm going to get a sudden influx of people at the end. We've got a lot more people can come this year, but numbers are limited to 200. So at the moment, we're at the 60-ish mark. So we've only got 140 tickets left to sell between now and July, which means that, you know, that's 3 months of sales. They could go. So if you want a ticket, now's the time to get it. The other one is The Curry. Now, I went out for curry with Paul Kirkle, who's the iPad artist that's at the Gadget Show at the moment. If you are going to the Gadget Show over the weekend, I'll be there on Saturday. I'll be on stand C120 with Paul, which is Guildford College where he teaches. Do stop by and say hello to Paul if you possibly can. And you'll get your portrait drawn as well, free of charge, by a very, very talented artist. But he went over and we had a curry at the Kismet Curry House, which is over the road. Carl's eaten there and Mr. Paul Wheatley's eaten there as well as, and now Paul Kirkle's eaten there, and he says it's the best curry house in the world. It is good.
However, Will Green reckons it's only the second best.
Because he's never eaten there.
Oh, is it one of the second best?
Oh, well, how is he in a position to judge it then?
Exactly.
Now, he said on the British back this week that it was the second best, so I assumed he'd eaten there.
Absolutely. No, he's never eaten there. So, the British Mac is stealing all my good lines as well. But that's another story. We'll have that afterwards. He's back on tomorrow. He's been on jury service this week, and it would put the craps at me if Will Green was on my jury, I have to say. I'd just
yeah, me too.
Excuse me, Your Honour. Can I change my plea, please?
Imagine if he was the foreman.
Oh, Christ.
The judge would say, could you deliver your verdict? Well, it'd be a nice 5-minute story.
Well, it's all been bollocks, hasn't it, really?
Like that episode of Hancock.
It would. So, if you want to come to the curry, is on the Friday night of the 5th. It's a 9 p.m. sit down, so make sure your flight, your car, your whatever gets you here in time to sit down at 9 p.m. You need to play for a different ticket. It's a £10 ticket, and that is not your curry and all the beer that you can drink at the curry house. That is £10 off your bill. And I went over and saw Milan, the guy that owns the restaurant, and I said to him, we're going to do £10. It's got to come off the bill. And he said, right, if people sit in fours or sixes or whatever, there's just be £60 off that bill, £40 off that bill, whatever it is. So you sort it amongst yourselves. But the £10, again, gets you a deposit, which gets you a seat, which gets you £10 off your curry bill at the end of the night. That's it. It's a separate ticket. You need to buy both if you want to come to the curry and the bash. You can come to just the curry. You can come to just the bash. It's entirely up to you. There's no both ticket, though. You can't buy both. And if you're buying tickets for everyone, all of your mates, like Paul Wheatley did, once you work out what the PayPal account is, you are welcome to send through a block booking and just tell me who, because it's fine.
Well, frankly, I couldn't trust Sam and Chiz to do it themselves. So.
Nah, they were never going to do it. They'd be like the fictitious Sam's, Chiz's girlfriend, rather. Moving on. We've had some reviews. We've had some lovely reviews. Thank you very much. We had one from the Real Mad Scientist that says, this is a smorgasbord. Now, I've no idea how to spell smorgasbord, and this excellently describes the podcast. It starts with the idea of discussing the news and quickly grows legs and runs off in all directions. This is without doubt great fun to listen to or watch, and the guests from all over the small blue-green planet joining the fun. This formula gives the viewer or listener a unique perspective on the news in tech, and this, along with the Mac Show, are the podcasts I wait for each week. Keep up the great work. Chin chin, Alex. Thank you, Alex. Very kind of you to write this. Alex, the Real Mad Scientist, not Alex Fox writing in just with a bit of nepotism. So thank you very much. And we had a couple from the Canadian store as well that said something of a similar vein. So thank you to those people as well. I need to go back and get the names of those people and read them out. I'll do that before the end of the show. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. We say it every week. And it must get really boring for you guys to hear every time we get to the UK advert, but the UK 2 people do keep us afloat. They really, really do. They pick up all the bandwidth. The chat room has had no end of problems this evening with the feed through from Justin. Justin really is a piece of crap. I don't think it's my fault at this end, because for once, my CPU is down at 70%. So here's the thing. Please, please, please buy your stuff from UK 2 for the web. Go out to our website, BritishTechNetwork.com, and click on the link through to the sponsors page. Buy your stuff from them. Use the offer codes that we've got, and you save yourself a fortune, and you reinforce the fact that it's worth UK2 sponsoring us. We truly have unlimited bandwidth for the way that they support us, so one of the things that we're looking at the moment is trying to replace Justin TV with our own service. If anyone out there knows how to do this instantly and get Wirecast Abroad test to it, then please get in touch, and we'll put you in touch with Charlie and Sarah, who will figure out how we're going to do it, and Anders as well, if he knows how to help. Write to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We could do with any help we possibly can manage, but we basically need an output from Wirecast direct to our server so that everyone can just watch us, because Justin is a piece of crap despite the fact there's like a tenner a month off me. That'll stop, trust me. UK 2, they're bloody marvellous. Marvellous. I won't hear a bad word. Right then. Have we got any cool things? Mr. Paul Wheatley, do you want to start us off?
Okay, okay. I'm going to do, I think it'll probably be a couple of cool things. I've been a premium member of Evernote for years. Probably about 5 years now, using it for scanning letters and things like that. But I very recently, based on you and your recommendation, and also my dad signed up to it, I signed up to Screencast Online about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you can't beat it.
And yeah, I have to say, it has almost created Evernote as a brand new application that I'd never touched before. Just uncovered so many tiny little bits about it that I just didn't know existed. And subsequently, I've watched the Alfred 2 one that he released last week, and I've been using Alfred for years as well. And it's practically that. It's practically made him into brand new applications for me. So my pick is technically Evernote, but more accurately, it's Screencast Online. Absolutely superb.
Don McAllister's been a very strong supporter of the network, apart from the fact he comes on the blooming Mac show most weeks. He gave us the Mac Pro that we're currently broadcasting on, and I don't think the problems that we got with broadcasting tonight are down to the Mac Pro. the dude gave us a whole Mac Pro. I mean, it's, you know, I'll be paying for his ticket for the bash, I promise you, this year.
Don's an awesome
he's
guy.
He's the only exemption. But yeah, if you're a Mac user, you've got to have A, Alfred app, and B, Screencast Online subscription, because Don is superb. I say it every week, but he really is fantastic.
Really, really is. Mm-hmm.
Good pick. Good pick. Jeff, what have you got, mister?
I have another website for you, and this one is called How Far Is Mars? And it's a cool little website that gives you a visual representation of the distance between Earth and Mars. And so it's a scale representation. So Earth is 100 pixels wide in this on the site. And then it flies you through space all the way to Mars, assuming Mars is at its closest distance to Earth. Because the way the orbits fit, sometimes Mars is a little closer to Earth. Mm. Sometimes it's a little farther away. And it's just this very simple website that I think offers an incredibly awesome visualization of how far things away from us are in space.
Yeah, I wrote a blog post with my lad about the solar system and how big the separation was between them. And that kind of gives you a scale of just what those distances are like. But if you at the speed that you fly, it's something like 110 days, 120 days to fly Mars?
Yeah, 120, 150 days, somewhere in there, yes.
Yeah. The couple are going to do 16 months in space flying out there and back, and all they're doing is a lap, isn't it? So,
yeah, it's crazy. So the website is distance2mars.com.
That's
all spelled out.
I love that kind of stuff. Brilliant. Sarah, what have you got for us, missus?
Yeah, mine's a piece of hardware this week. It's as you probably know, I've got my Nexus 10 now. One of the things I found, I've been slightly struggling with the on-screen keyboard, despite the Swift Key one, which I actually quite like, but I do alternate between that and the standard one. But I found when I'm doing lots of notes, and particularly when I'm doing notes for things like the F1 show and stuff like that, that I really struggle with using it. So I kind of thought, well, okay, I need a Bluetooth keyboard, an external keyboard. And I found this pretty good. It's Bluetooth keyboard. It's $17.99 on Amazon. It's got the Anker Ultra Slim Bluetooth keyboard. I really, really get on with the layout of it. I know Carl's got a keyboard coming up as well, and this is very much at the cheap end, but it does the job perfectly, works exactly what I need it to do. I'm really pleased with that.
Mm. Good pick. Small keyboards.
Yeah.
Andy, what have you got for us, mate?
I've got a free web service, and I've only found it out this week, and I don't know why, but it's called Mailinator. What it is, basically, it's free inbox for anyone, and you use it to set up an email address to receive spam or possible spam. I've created an inbox at Mailinator called Big Show Live. So if I wanted to go to a website and they say, please provide an email address so you can carry on to register and they're a bit dubious, you can put in bigshowlive@mailinator.com. And anything is sent, so obviously that website will send the emails to that web address, and they will sit in this little inbox for about 24 hours. So you've got a short while to go and grab the email, click any links, and then they're deleted. So it's really, really clever. And you can use like POP3 to go collect your mails. There's even, if you go to http://bigshowlive.mailinator.com, that's mailinator.com, and you can see any emails that come in. You can have up to 25 characters for your inbox, so that's quite a massive choice. So you can come up with a nice random inbox that only you would ever use, and use it for making sure you don't get spam at your own address, really. I think it's fabulous. Really, really clever.
Excellent.
One thing you got to be, because there's no security on it, is there?
None whatsoever.
So you make sure you send nothing sensitive to it.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't want to put some kind of super secret stuff going there. But right. If you were to make, I mean, I used LastPass and I set it to generate a password for me of, A to Z and 0 to 9, up to 25 characters, and checked it, click generate and use that. And then you can use an alias. They also allow you to do an alias, so no one else can. So if you use that alias, no one else knows what inbox that's going to, but only you.
Paul in the chat room says, Anders, that's bloody brilliant.
It's free as well. It's just brilliant.
A resounding well done. Fort says in the chat room, took an astronomy class in college and did some scale of the solar system with a 2-foot beach ball. We couldn't walk to Pluto. It would have been 10 miles away. And I've got to say, I think you've got that wrong, because I did the scale for Pluto and it's 96 kilometres away. It's maybe one.
That would be more than 10 miles.
Yeah, just a bit.
No, I did a 10-foot swimming pool in the back garden. And the Pluto was the size of my little fingernail, and it was 96 kilometres away. So that they might have been doing ball. Yeah. Carl, what have you got for us, bud?
Well, I got another keyboard. It's slightly dearer than Sarah's one. I got the Logitech Ultra Thin keyboard for the iPad Mini, my old trusty iPad. And it just clips on there, so you can balance it away. I better drop it now.
It's magnetised, isn't it, on the hinge?
That's it. And you can also take it out of there, and it just snaps to the side. Oh, hang on, wrong way around. That's clever, wasn't it? Get it on the right side. Just clips on, shuts up, protects the front of your iPad. It's a lovely little device. It's £70, properly, but you can get it on Amazon for about £65 at the moment.
Now, Don recommended that on the Mac show the other week, and my question to him was, how does it do with pudgy fat fingers? Now, based on the fact that he's a short arse, I don't believe that for a second. Your fingers are a lot closer to the size of mine, mate. Not quite as broad, perhaps, but no. How does it do for typing?
Well, the only thing that's wrong with it is, because it's so small, it's slightly off-centre. So, like, the QWERTY keyboard layout is right on the far left-hand side, so it takes a bit of time to get used to your slightly off center when you come to typing stuff. But once you get over that, it's fine. I mean, I can't knock out like one of my little story things as fast as I can on the normal keyboard. But you get there, and you can do it while you're in a pinch.
But the whole point with the one I bought, Ian, was I wanted it to be able to act like a normal keyboard, and I found I can actually use it like a normal keyboard.
Mm.
There is a decent amount of spacing between the keys.
The thing that's nice about the Logitech keyboards is there's a button for home. isn't it? Top left, so you can hit that and it takes you to the home screen. You can go to search with it as well, dead easy.
It was the backspace key, but I found out how to do it eventually.
You can do the copy and paste, it'll open up your mail, it'll turn on Siri and stuff like that as well, all from just using the keyboard.
Excellent. Good picks. My pick, I got two. Everyone knows I've been building like a camera platform for remote control camera platform, and I've put a few videos on YouTube and I've had a lot of fun doing it. I've learnt so much, but I still have the odd disaster, and I had a little bit of a disaster the other night. I took both helicopters out and crashed both of them. One was flying at me head when it crashed. I thought I could blip the throttle and the power would take it over my head, and it just didn't respond. And there you go. It happens. You fly helicopters, you crash them. One of the things you need is someone that will send you some spares reasonably quickly. There's two websites, unmannedtech.com, which I tweeted out. They're where I buy an awful lot of spares from them, replacement legs, replacement arms, those kind of things, ESCs and motors. And one other one is a young lad named Luke, who's... I just like the way that I just stumbled across him through a search for some items. I buy three-bladed propellers from him, which are very much more efficient. And I've learnt an awful lot about the difference between a two-blade and a three-blade propeller. But Luke has got some great customer services. I've written to him with a couple of problems, and he sorted them out straight away. And I've struck quite a nice relationship with him. He's a good lad. So if you do fly your little model helicopters and that kind of stuff, or you like your own control stuff and you want stuff to buy, you can even get little kits from him here. Go to Spares RC as an eBay station. We'll put it in the show notes. And he's a nice bloke. He's got a good customer ethic, and he sends you the stuff that you want. And it comes promptly as well, very, very promptly. He's not one of these guys that just rips you off on postage and that kind of thing. So if you do anything, give him a shout. Tell him I sent you. He's a good, good fella. So there you go. Spares RC as an eBay shop. Superb. I won't be posting the video of me crashing it, however. No, it wasn't good. I do duck pretty well, though. For an old fat man, I move pretty quick.
When you're being attacked by a flying airplane, exactly. It's amazing how nimble one can be.
I shed a few pounds that night. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Wheatley?
The best place is probably Twitter. I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. Alternatively, you could listen to the iOS show or the Gamer show on this here network.
I listen to both out of choice rather than duty, I have to say.
When we actually get around to doing an iOS show.
Yeah, I mean, iOS show, not so much. It's a little bit more like British Mac. In terms of its frequency, but certainly the Gamer Show is a must-have. And when you missed the other week, I was besides myself.
Well, we actually did miss it. We recorded an entire show, but I managed somehow to move the entire audio to the beginning of the track. What we ended up, when I exported it and overwrote the original file, was we had 5 minutes that was actually 5 minutes at the end of the show, 45 minutes of silence, then the end music. So it did cross my mind just to put it out there just to see how many folk would download it. But
it would have cut down on the bleeping required.
Well, that is very true, actually.
Oh, sure.
We had the whole section this week where Chiz ended up choking, so that probably yes. actually saved us a little bit of bleeping.
You actually stopped the podcast and went out because you were concerned at one point. Genuinely concerned, I thought.
Oh, no, he was. He was. He actually got up and left, and he was going kind of pink and red, and he ran through to the bathroom just along the hall, and he sounded really like he was struggling, so we had to stop and make sure he was okay. Yeah, so all good. Excellent. But he came back with a swear word, so that was.
You've got to talk to them about.
So all was well.
You've got to talk to them about doing weekly, mate. And if you're saying there's not enough content to do weekly, rubbish, mate, because you don't.
No.
There's hardly any content in that show.
It's not content. It's an amount of time so that we can play games, so we actually have something to talk about. Excellent. We don't have enough time to kind of get through decent and amount of games so that we can actually have a decent, well, not even that we have a decent review, but so we can have an acceptable review.
Excellent, mate. And you have to come to the Bash. If you're sitting thinking, what's the Gamer Show all about? Go and listen to the Christmas podcast. It's still on the server. You can download it and listen to Chiz wipe the floor with all comers there. It will be a hell of a day at the Bash. I promise you. Jeff, where can we get hold of you, mate?
Well, since I'm managing editor at Mac Observer, you can find me there pretty much all the time. So that's macobserver.com. And you can find me on Twitter and app.net at jgamut. And you can also find me in coffee shops, or more accurately, in my blog about coffee shops, freshbrewedtales.com, where I talk about all the stupid, stupid things that I see happening when I go to get my soy chai every day.
And the prime directive applies.
And thanks for having
me
on all the time.
No, Laura, yeah,
and prime directive applies.
You cannot interfere. Paul Holmes in the chat room says, have we got batch tickets? They're on sale. They're on the website. All you've got to do is go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the pay now. Which should be, say, buy now, really, because it's kind of like stand and deliver otherwise, maybe. But click on the pay now and pay for your bash ticket and your curry ticket separately, and you're in. You're in. It's that easy.
Yes.
Sarah, where are you, girl?
Yeah, I'm on the Twitters and app.net at Sarah Jane UK.
Excellent.
Think about that for a second.
Oh, well, don't worry. Never know who you are. Anders, where are you, sir?
Twitter and app.net as well, on Anders UK, on my website, figster.net.
And we're talking about some new apps at the minute, you and me, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Some good ideas from you.
Thank you, mate. Very chuffed. Praise indeed, I would say, because most of the stuff I think of is utter rubbish. And last but by no means least, and that I will remember to tweet out who's on this week's show. Otherwise, he's going to bloody hit me. Carl, how you doing, man?
Fine, thank you. You can get me on Twitter at Claw0101 and also on the media show with Mr. Russ. And this week we got Tony Blunt and Doug and Christine from the Sort Out podcast on with us.
Oh, excellent. Now, I've got to say, you bemoaned the fact of the loss of the tape deck, didn't you, in iOS? And Russ hated the fact that it was gone, but you drive for a living, the same as me. I couldn't be happier than see the tape get pissed off, and because it was made... It was awful to try and navigate podcasts while you were driving.
It was. Now it's just like a flick of the finger, and it's always on the screen. It's just there. No accidentally flicking the art up and you get the tape deck, so you have to flick it back down. Oh, it was a nightmare.
What's wrong with high and low speed scroll? That worked perfectly.
I have no idea. I mean, I find it much better, the new podcast app. The fact that I can, before I start my trip, I can queue up exactly what I want to listen to in exactly the right order.
Yeah, now that bloke's got a full-time job, he's getting outside of himself, that bloke Russ. He's taken down a peg or two. We'll be back again next week. Big show as normal. Nothing's going to change. We might even get some of the stories right.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.